Jeff Wilke did something unusual when he left his role as Amazon's worldwide consumer CEO earlier this year, after more than two decades with the company.
I left on March 1st, and I spent the first 2 weeks learning to code in Python. I had lots of computer scientists that were working for me in the organization, and I was heavily involved in a bunch of architectural decisions, but I hadn't written code in years. So I just thought it'd be useful to update my skills after a couple of decades, and was blown away. The coolest thing about coding that you realize when you do it is that you get to stand on the shoulders of all the other people who have written code and uploaded it to libraries before you. And so you don't have to go back and reinvent everything. And that just means innovation and invention and goodness can accelerate. I actually left those 2 weeks totally optimistic.
Wilke is translating that optimism into a variety of investments and projects across a range of interests and industries, from biotech to honeybees. But the venture getting most of his time and attention is Rebuild Manufacturing. It's a Massachusetts-based company that's on a quest to reinvigorate the U.S. manufacturing industry. Rebuild has raised more than $400 million and made six acquisitions in engineering services and advanced materials. It has six facilities in five states. Wilke is the company's chairman and co-founder. It's a return to his roots. He grew up in Pittsburgh and worked early on in pharmaceuticals, chemicals, and electronics. I'm GeekWire co-founder Todd Bishop. On this episode of the GeekWire podcast, we talk about the future of U.S. manufacturing with Jeff Wilke and Rebuild Manufacturing CEO Miles Arnone, a longtime industrial business leader, inventor, and investor who co-founded the company with Wilke. And later in the show, during a momentous week for Amazon, we also get Jeff Wilke's thoughts about his former employer. Jeff and Miles, thank you both very much for being here.
Thanks, Todd. Happy to be here.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Jeff, let's start with you. Obviously, you were for many years an Amazon executive and left the company a few months ago now. Learning to code in Python was step number one, but there have been multiple steps since then. So what have you been up to?
Mostly what I've been doing is connecting with founders in a whole host of industries. It's been super interesting to learn about the innovation that's occurring throughout the economy and the really passionate people who are behind these companies. And then working on one that I've co-founded with Miles, who's also on this podcast, to help to build Rebuild Manufacturing, which is what I think what we're going to talk most about today. But that is the thing, of all the things that I've been spending time on, that's the thing that gets the most of my attention.
Jeff, I want to talk a little bit later on about your roots in Pittsburgh and the manufacturing industry, because I know that plays a lot into why this interests you. And frankly, it was one of the things I know that led you in an indirect way to Amazon. But Miles, to set this up, can you give us your elevator pitch? What is Rebuild Manufacturing about? What do you do, and what do you hope to accomplish long term?
Sure. Yeah, so nice to be here. And Rebuild was founded, you know, to sort of address the fact that the U.S. industrial economy over the last 20 to 30 years has really taken quite a few hits. You know, just going into the way back time machine for a minute, when I was growing up outside of New York City in the late 80s in high school, you know, everyone was worried about the Japanese impact on the U.S. auto industry, semiconductors, machine tools, and so on. And if at that time you had said, don't worry about Japan, it's China that you need to look out for, people would have, for the most part, laughed about that concept, right? And here we are today in a situation where U.S. industry and industrial firms have become extremely dependent on Asian suppliers, Chinese suppliers in particular, and we've hollowed out a lot of the U.S. industrial base. And that has a series of pretty significant ramifications on national security, but also on job security, and frankly, the ability to finance our democracy, which is expensive, right? It's expensive to have a democracy. And so we have a lot of motivation from the fact that without good industrial jobs and without good industrial technology, it's very hard to maintain our not just standard of living, but our entire way of living and our focus on a democratic society, right? So we have a situation today where a lot of people, I like to say, are bearing hard red or hard blue, you know, depending upon where you grew up, what kind of state you're from for the most part. But in our view, the roots of those things are very much the same. It's some level of dissatisfaction with your prospects in America today and whether or not there are real opportunities to move up the ladder economically. And, you know, it used to be that manufacturing jobs were the best way to go about doing that. You could work in a manufacturing plant as an engineer or a production person and move up over time, gain more skills, be paid well, buy a home, get your family into college, and so on. And a lot of that has been hollowed out to the point where we have a real binomial distribution, so to speak, where you could have a very nice college degree and do just fine in IT or computer science or one of the professions, or you are a high school graduate and, you know, you have to face a future that's a lot less stable than it might have seemed a generation ago. So that's kind of the motivation. But that's not enough of a, you know, explanation as to what Rebuild is. That only tells you a little bit about why we're doing it. But what we hope to do with Rebuild is to help create a new model for rejuvenating the U.S. industrial base. And we recognize, obviously, that in the U.S., the labor pool is not a low-cost labor pool. And frankly, we don't want it to be necessarily. And so you need a different way to go about that than just slinging inexpensive labor at the problem. And our approach to that is to invest in advanced technologies that can drive substantial, meaningful change in products or production processes, and then acquire and build businesses around those technologies that we can improve by deploying that technology across these businesses. And of course, it also subsumes all of the usual and very important steps of implementing theory of constraints or lean, 5S, et cetera, to run very strong tactical operations. But that's a, in our view, a necessary and not sufficient condition these days. You really need that technical lever. And obviously, U.S. has a great history of technological achievement and advancement, and we hope to harness that a little more effectively in the service of manufacturing than has been done the last couple of decades.
Jeff, you obviously come from a company that uses technology to find efficiencies and improvements and innovations as a matter of operating day to day. That's sort of in Amazon's DNA. Can you give us any concrete examples, specific things that you see happening in this realm along the lines of what Miles just talked about?
Well, one of the things that I learned in helping to build Amazon's operations and logistics is that these principles that had come from manufacturing, Miles mentioned a few, lean, Six Sigma, statistical process control, the theory of constraints, these things work in operations whether you're bending metal or shipping packages. And what we did at Amazon was borrow from manufacturing, implement these things to change the way warehouses worked in retail, and added computer science, great technologists who are turning the ideas that you generate on the shop floor into code that can repeat those ideas, which proved to be very scalable. So what I think we need to do is take that combination of technology, sort of, you know, modern computer science, and the ideas that have been around in manufacturing for decades that are about process improvement, and that marriage that worked at Amazon, bring it back to manufacturing. That's the way that you can compete, I think, with folks who have, you know, low wages and different environmental standards, for example, as their competitive advantage.
Does this mean robotics and AI primarily?
We don't plan to invest heavily in robotics any more than we don't plan not to do it. What we're trying to do is to build competitive businesses in manufacturing. And we'll invest in automation with the intention of augmenting our workforce where it makes sense, but not replacing it. Automation and technology are not the goal. They're a tool that will help us achieve the mission of making American manufacturing or one American manufacturing company competitive.
If I can add, Jeff, I think one thing that's worth noting there to that point is that we plan to complement automation, which is just one part of the equation, with a number of things. One, we can shorten supply chains. Two, we can respect our customers' intellectual property in a way that maybe isn't typical in certain countries. We can improve product and process design. We can use software to improve planning, quality, customer responsiveness. You know, all of these things help shorten design cycles and production lead times. And so these are other levers beyond just automation that can dramatically improve your competitiveness on the world stage from a manufacturing perspective.
Yeah, there really are many other levers besides simply automation that can improve competitiveness for sure.
In reading through the Rebuild Manufacturing website and getting up to speed on the company, one thing that was a little bit unclear to me was the extent to which Rebuild will operate and run companies itself versus sell its technology or offer its approaches to others to implement on their own, even if those might not be companies within your own portfolio. Where do you see that shaking out, if you know at this point?
We certainly have some ideas. Miles, you want to hear this one?
Sure, of course. So in the end, most of our companies have external clients, as you would imagine, customers, right? So for example, we're already heavily invested in composites, and each of our businesses in that area sell products to other industrial, commercial, or ultimately consumer-oriented firms. So there's obviously lots of external sales in that regard, but we are also acquiring and building businesses whose principal purpose is to develop technology or deploy technology for our internal use. So whether that's a new type of process machinery or software that optimizes a workflow in a way that gives us a competitive differentiation in an engineering process or a manufacturing process. So there's certainly that as well. But in those cases, to your point, certainly if that technology that we've developed or acquired has a broader application, we would certainly expect to continue to sell that and want to sell that in the external market because, you know, outside customers keep you sharp, right? And, you know, our experience is that when you internalize a business to only, you know, service, let's say, your own family of companies, you can lose a little bit of that competitive edge or that market connection that drives innovation and drives a certain sense of urgency about the work.
Since we started operations in November, Todd, we've now got 6 manufacturing plants across 5 states through acquisition to start. And those member companies are serving external customers, as Miles mentioned, but they're also beginning to serve each other and work jointly on programs where they can collaborate and bring skills that each of them have together to offer something that none of them could have offered on their own. And that really is part of the thesis for how we add value.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jeff. I'm glad you mentioned that because this idea of intensive collaboration between our businesses versus, let's say, a more traditional conglomerate where you might have verticals organized by end market, which don't interact one very much with the other, is an important part of what we're trying to do here. And we've seen some really very promising returns in that front already. So every business that we buy or build, we ask ourselves, how is this business going to interact with our other member companies in a way that creates value that wouldn't have otherwise been possible? And we're not really inclined to buy businesses that will stand by themselves and do their own thing, even if that's going to be done well. Our entire thesis is built around the idea that, again, technical collaboration, but also in other dimensions, can lead to improvement and enhancements that are substantial. And I think you see this to some extent in things like the Keiretsu in Korea and in some of the large integrated businesses in China, too, where they can provide a very holistic approach to their customers or to a technical or manufacturing problem. Whereas in the U.S., we tend to have a bit more fractured manufacturing base of small to mid-sized companies. Of course, there are large ones as well, but there are a lot of tier one, tier two, tier three suppliers that are pretty small. And that fragmentation, we think, is a form of inefficiency that hurts our competitiveness globally.
I think of manufacturing traditionally in the U.S., and I know this is a cliche, but Jeff, it plays into your roots. I think of steel. And frankly, it's not even correct in Pittsburgh anymore. It's all about robotics and AI there in Pittsburgh, as I know, because I spent a little bit of time there. What types of products make the most sense right now for the U.S. manufacturing base to start with to try and revitalize itself? And are those types of products reflected in your initial focus as Rebuild Manufacturing?
It's not an accident that we started with advanced materials, thermoplastic and thermoset composites, titanium, aluminum. There's a lot of engineering that goes into the application of certain materials and for certain parts, components, and ultimately, you know, finished goods. And we think that rebuilding the capability to do that design work where a company, let's say a company that's producing an electronic vehicle or leaning into sustainable energy in some way and producing some new thing that doesn't yet, you know, that doesn't currently exist to help in that space, they're going to have to assemble from a series of subcomponents. And if the only design partners they can find who can both do the engineering with them and then produce because they understand the materials are outside of the United States, you're going to probably end up building a lot of your factory capacity outside the United States, and you can be close to those suppliers. So we sort of started with advanced materials in part because we think if we could demonstrate great engineering work and great finished product work in advanced materials, then we can start to build around it and build more and more complicated subassemblies. And then people can ultimately locate, and this won't just be us, it'll be multiple firms in the US, but you'll have people building finished good factories right next to those tiers of suppliers who can co-engineer with them, you know, and start with the materials and basic assemblies that are needed to assemble their final product.
Well, to your point, I think the first thing that we often hear as reporters covering hardware startups especially is, and then we went to Shenzhen and worked on a design there. And of course, that's where the manufacturing took place.
You know, it's interesting, Todd, you mentioned that because there's two developments ongoing that I think play very well to what our strategy is and that we also hope to service. One is that a lot of companies want to bring back their production to the U.S., whether that's, again, to improve their supply chain or protect their IP or be more responsive to the cycles of demand or have more of a mass customization approach. And a lot of them find, somehow mysteriously to them, that when they try to do that, they don't even have the prints anymore, right? If we're talking about electromechanical product, they literally do not maintain or possess the IP to build their own product. They become so dependent upon, you know, let's say a Shenzhen oriented or other supply chain that they can't pull that product back. And so we're getting a lot of engagement through our TPS business, which is our Total Production Solutions business, to help companies re-engineer their own product for manufacture in the US so that one, they can get control of their IP again, obviously improve the product while they're doing that as well. And then we can design it for manufacture in an effective way, given a US-based cost structure, whether again, that means certain amount of automation or changes in the way you design or build the product to reflect the need for lower labor content. So that's one. And then two, to your point, we see a lot of hard tech investment going on out of Silicon Valley and elsewhere. And they really, from our perspective, and when we speak with them, and Jeff, I think you can also speak to this, they're really interested in figuring out the product technology, that core IP, and then proving the market. But they don't necessarily want to put their capital to work building the factory behind that, right? Or if not that final factory, the factory making sub-assemblies and tier one type systems that go into their product. And so we've been spending a lot of time talking with venture capitalists around the country and gaining a reasonable amount of traction with the idea that we'll effectively invest alongside them through the building of productive capacity to support their design work and ultimately their attack on the market. So those two trends kind of speak to this need to of the kinds of products that are, you know, worthwhile to produce here and the kind of motivating factors that are driving people to reconsider it. Whereas for many years, the answer was, let's just, you know, go offshore. It's easier. We don't have to really be super skilled at running an efficient plant. We can just have those guys over there do it for less.
So we're starting with Advanced Materials Engineering Services, the Total Production Solutions business, and then we'll add additional technologies as we sort of fill out the capability to produce more complex, you know, subcomponents and assemblies for our customers.
Coming up, how Jeff Wilkie's experience at Amazon is informing his return to manufacturing.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Jeff, as I mentioned earlier, you have roots in manufacturing. Not only did you grow up in Pittsburgh, but you studied chemical engineering at Princeton, and then you went on to roles in pharmaceuticals and electronics, and you joined Amazon in 1999. And before you left, you were the CEO of Amazon's worldwide consumer business. And it strikes me, you've been on the other end of this supply chain in a very big way, receiving these products from overseas, largely Asia. To what extent did that experience inform your return to manufacturing, and are you able to apply any unique insights from your role at Amazon, your past role at Amazon, to this new venture at Rebuild?
Well, I think as you sort of went through my past, you know, this manufacturing is in my blood. Growing up in Pittsburgh, watching what happened as industries declined, I made a career choice in the early 90s to switch from software development to manufacturing because I was concerned about the beginning of the hollowing out and what it might do to to U.S. per capita wealth. And I read a book by Bill Baumol on this subject back in the early 90s. It was about U.S. productivity in the long run, and it terrified me. So I ended up switching gears, studying manufacturing at MIT, and then going to work at Allied Signal, which is a manufacturing company, now Honeywell, and learned a ton about how to do it in U.S. plants, mostly in U.S. plants. And so then I go to Amazon in 1999, and in the subsequent 20 years, the real hollowing out occurred. And I really, there aren't many plants that, you know, were around 25 years ago that I would have visited that I could visit now in the U.S. So you're right. And in serving customers through Amazon, we increasingly noticed that items were coming from, you know, factories in China, not from factories in the U.S. And that certainly struck a nerve with my past. But what I'm most proud of at Amazon on the operations side is the jobs that we created, the more than a million jobs that we created directly or as a result of the work that we did in the United States. And that gave me hope that we can and will need to have people working alongside machines for a long time. And if we can create environments where those jobs are good jobs, where the pay is good, the benefits are good, people are treated well, there are educational opportunities to move up, that people who are in these parts of the country where they don't have a lot of skills and they don't have a lot of prospects, that trajectory might change for them. Amazon really gave me hope, actually, in that regard. And that hope, coupled with some expertise in manufacturing, led to this new venture.
Jeff, I happen to know, just because of our past conversations, that that book you referenced, I know it was very influential. It was Productivity and American Leadership, The Long View.
Yep.
And that, as you said, was a wake-up call for you. Is it still relevant today? In other words, are the lessons from that book things that you can apply to what you're doing at Rebuild?
I think so. I think this goes to this question of why manufacturing, which we sort of get asked, aren't we past the need for manufacturing? And I really believe the strength of our country depends on our economy. That's the principle of the book, by the way, is that the strength of our country depends on our economy. And, if you drill one level lower, good paying jobs matter. Industries that create value, that really create value, that take inputs that are lower value and create higher value outputs and do it robustly matter. And if I think about the industry that creates both good paying jobs and that creates value robustly, manufacturing contributes among the highest combination of any industry. And I think without it, as we discussed earlier, we're beholden to other nation states that focus on these priorities. So that's kind of the basics of the book. And I think it's just as relevant as it was 30 years ago.
This, though, seems like a huge challenge at this point. I mean, you're in some ways trying to turn back time. I realize you're doing it by moving forward and applying things that you've learned in new forms of technology. But what are the biggest challenges, the things that if you could solve them today or tomorrow, you know that your path forward would be much easier? What are the biggest things that you're taking on that keep you up at night?
Well, maybe I'll start because there's a segue with the prior question, and that's building out a computer science-based technology team in parallel. I really do believe that the large U.S. tech firms are well ahead of any manufacturer in the world in terms of the application of computer science to hard problems. It's certainly true for U.S. firms that they're behind in the application of CS in both process and product technology. And I think we have to build that up so that we can engineer faster, we can develop faster, we can fail faster, we can launch faster, we can scale better, and we can build better companies. And so we're starting from a dearth of technology expertise in computer science in this area, in this country. And so we're going to work hard at that. We are finding people who don't want to work at, at Amazon or Microsoft or Google, who just really want to join this mission to help rebuild U.S. manufacturing. And I think we'll find enough of those kinds of computer scientists to make a difference. But that's one big gap that I see that we're going to try to overcome as fast as possible.
I'll say what doesn't keep me up at night was the premise of your question, which is effectively, is it game over already, right? It seems like so much has changed and so much industrial power and prowess has moved to China and Asia. I mean, again, as we noted earlier in our call, I think if 25 years ago you said that this would be the situation, no one would have believed that, or very few people. And for those same reasons, I think that there can be substantial shifts even today because I do think there are a lot of levers in the United States and the way we're organized in terms of our economy and government and educational system and the use of technology that can give us a lot of industrial capability and power and the ability to grow. So what does keep me up at night, though, is making sure that we build a really strong, sustainable, impactful culture, and that we have principles and adhere to those principles as we grow, right? We're at this critical juncture where the company is really forming and growing rapidly. And it's at this time that those things become, you know, somewhat set. And so I spend a lot of time, and our team spends a lot of time focusing on our principles, which we've encapsulated in what we call the Rebuild Way, and ensuring that as we bring disparate cultures together, you know, when companies join Rebuild, that we bring the most important elements of that to bear upon these companies, while at the same time maintaining the positive elements of their local culture that enabled them to succeed. So we're trying to stitch together a highly collaborative group of companies while maintaining, you know, their local capabilities and yet still providing a certain degree of federalism, so to speak, for lack of a better term. And, you know, that's challenging, but yet extremely important to our ultimate success. So that's the thing that I tend to focus on most, beyond what are the technologies and what are the tactical dimensions of competition, as Jeff was speaking to, for example, the deployment of software in a way that changes the nature of products or processes to the better. That I tend to focus on.
And Todd, I would also just add that there are some things that are well beyond Rebuild, but that I think are going to be necessary for the U.S. to dig itself out of the hole. And those include, and there are some priorities that the country is already talking about, like upgrading infrastructure, you know, raising awareness and enthusiasm for things like manufacturing, and perhaps most importantly, advancing the education and the size of the pool of skilled employees to do this kind of work. Because we've lost a lot of that skill over the last 30 years. And, you know, we're going to have to dedicate ourselves to giving people a pathway to relearn those skills.
After the break, Jeff Wilkie's thoughts on a momentous week at Amazon as founder Jeff Bezos officially steps down as CEO and hands the reins to Andy Jassy. Jeff, I was just reading that you invested in a smart pollination company as well. Is there a theme, a unifying theme to what you're doing apart from your own involvement?
You know, look, I'm super fond of this country that's been very good to me. And I hope that our generation can leave it, you know, better than we found it. And, you know, we have a lot of work to do in that regard. So I'm trying to focus my investments and my time on things that I think are really going to matter for the country and the world. And turns out pollination by bees is pretty important for food production and in our way of life. And I've met some clever entrepreneurs who have really interesting science and stuff. And so that one, it kind of fits this mission that is about sustainability. I've invested in some things that are related to decarbonization, carbon sequestration, done some stuff that's related to energy storage. That's kind of a theme for me, which is long-term focus. I've also done some investments in biotech. I really do believe we're on the cusp of huge advancements in human health, and I'm super interested in that space too. And but again, these themes are just, I hope that we get to participate in leaving the world, you know, a little bit better than when we found it.
I know this is not the topic of our conversation, but it's obviously a momentous week at your former employer. I would be remiss if I didn't at least ask you for some of your impressions about what this moment means in Amazon's history.
Well, I think the world of Andy, and I think, you know, Jeff isn't going anywhere. He'll be executive chairman. He and Andy have worked well together for decades. I was encouraged to see the new Amazon leadership principles. I do think they're appropriate for this stage at Amazon. You know, I think striving to be Earth's best employer makes a lot of sense. It was always important to me when I was there. And I actually always considered the leadership principle that was about earns trust to be an important component of building a great employee environment. And then I'd love for Rebuild someday to be big enough to start worrying about whether we should add a Rebuild way that's called success and scale. We have a lot of work to do to get there.
Jeff, would it be a stretch to think of the aspiration for Rebuild to be the Amazon of manufacturing? I you can see me cringing as I'm even saying this, are there parallels in the potential growth path?
Well, you know, Rebuild's a very different company than Amazon. So I think there's going to be a ton of differences. It is a very plant-focused company, and I hope always will be. Amazon has studios, and it has AWS, and it has the core consumer business, which is very plant-dependent. But this company, Rebo Manufacturing, is going to be all about plants for probably its entire existence. So I think it'll be more U.S.-centric. Amazon evolved to be a very global company, and appropriately so. I think Rebuild will have global customers, and it may have global plants someday, but we're going to be very U.S. focused for a very long time.
And then, of course, the most important question of all, Jeff, is your closet still full of flannel? And what will you be wearing come October?
This is a great question. Okay, so the October thing is, the fourth quarter in retail, it's a time when everybody used to go out from the headquarters to the field. And so I would wear these flannel shirts when I was doing work out in the field. And then people stopped going to the field at Amazon, and because we didn't need them there, and at peak. And I felt like the corporate world was getting a little too corporate for me. So I October 1st, I would just wear these old flannel shirts every day until the end of the fourth quarter. Well, we don't have that same seasonality at Rebuild. We don't have a fourth quarter peak that, at least yet, that we're going to that would cause everybody to have to go out to the factories to, to make parts. But I can tell you that I'm likely to wear stuff when I go out to the field. It's a little different than I might wear, in an interview or in a corporate setting. That's for sure.
Okay. So the flannel is still around, is what you're saying.
Hell yes.
All right. Perfect way to end. Jeff and Miles, thank you very much for talking with me.
Yeah. Pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd. It's great to see you again.
Miles Arnone is co-founder and CEO of Rebuild Manufacturing. Jeff Wilkie is the company's chairman and co-founder and the former CEO of Amazon's worldwide consumer business. See the show notes for links to more, including an in-depth interview with Wilkie by our partners at the tech news site .la. To see all of GeekWire's coverage of science, tech, business, and more, go to geekwire.com and sign up for our daily email newsletter to receive all of our stories. Kurt Milton edits our show. Our music is by Daniel L.K. Caldwell. I'm your host, GeekWire co-founder Todd Bishop. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on GeekWire.